Welcome back, everybody. We have on the line with us a very special guest. I'm really excited to talk to him, too, because he's talking about something that I've always been interested in for my own self, too. And his name is Dr. David Steenblok. He is a stem cell expert, and he's treated a lot of different ailments from cerebral palsy, ALS, strokes, and a lot more. And I'm thinking this is something that might be pretty good for me as well. Welcome to the show, Dr. David. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks.
Well, I'm glad you're able to join us here today. I'm really excited to talk about what you have because it's something that I think is very interesting, and I think it could really help a lot. I know that stem cells for the longest time were really considered taboo. I don't know why. How has that changed since pretty much the time of like the mid-90s up until now?
Boy, that's the question. In 2000, I was pretty much the only doctor in the country doing stem cells, and because it was not an approved drug, you're the first man to stand up, so you are the one that attacks immediately because you're the only one doing it. So instead of doing the stem cells here, I started doing stem cells in Mexico, and we had a clinic down there, and we treated many people. We talk to them here, examine them here, and then just drive them down to Tijuana and give them the stem cells so that we would not be attacked by our government. So that went on for 6-7 years, and slowly Mexico became less hospitable and the United States became more hospitable because more and more doctors started to do stem cells. And so by 2010, fat stem cells were being done, bone marrow stem cells were being done, and umbilical cord stem cells were just starting to get to be used by a variety of different, progressive doctors. So from 2010 to now, there's been just a great rise in number of doctors doing it. Now, the trouble with it is that it is still illegal as far as the FDA is concerned because these are being considered drugs. Even though, if you do bone marrow, it comes from your own bone marrow, you would think that your own tissues cannot be called a drug, but the FDA, in their wisdom, has decided that in bone marrow and fat, your own body is and should be considered a drug. So we're at a little bit of a conflict, and it makes not much practical sense for the average person and for the average doctor. And I think the people at the FDA kind of say, why are you doing this? Especially when there's so few side effects and problems with the whole thing. It's not as if we're using some chemical that somebody took out of an oil well and modified it and turned it into some fancy drug that we don't, has never been in the human body before. And so in those cases, yeah, you do need to go through a kind of testing. But here we're talking about stem cells, talking about the most natural thing there is, human tissue. And as long as you don't have allergic reactions because you're not taking it from somebody else's body that's, that has tissue from that other person's body that you're putting in. In other words, for example, if you take umbilical cord cells from the umbilical cord, and you take along with that umbilical cord stem cells, you take umbilical cord tissue, then you can react to the tissue. So you have to be wary of this. You don't want to have any form of graft versus host reaction by taking somebody else's human tissue and putting it into your body. So as long as you don't do that, you don't have any side effects. Stem cells do not have reactions. They don't have graft versus host, etc. Now, it gets confusing because the cancer doctors are still using the tissue. Mm-hmm. For example, umbilical cord stem cells are available and are by the fact that a company sells umbilical cord blood for treatment of cancer, and that's blood. And the blood, of course, is not stem cells. It's foreign tissue. And so they have to do HLA matching, etc., because an arm and leg is each one of those blood a pint of blood from the umbilical cord with the tissues and all that, the blood costs like $35,000. To have one case treated, it costs about, $70,000. And so, and you have all these graft versus host reactions. And the reason for that is because the FDA is still not licensed and approved real stem cells. So we don't have real stem cells, but if we had real stem cells, everybody could use it, and you don't have any of these side effects. So what we have are doctors who are buying from companies that are making these and selling them to the doctors. Or, for example, in my case, I had my own stem cell lab and I manufacture and grow my own under my license, my medical license, that's allowed.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. Now, let's just take somebody, for instance, let's just take Michael J. Fox, for instance. You know, we know that he has Parkinson's disease, and it's pretty advanced at this point in time. Would a stem cell, if it becomes legal, and we can legally do this, would it cure him? Would it reverse the symptoms that he has with the shaking and everything else? Or does it just kind of keep it at bay so it doesn't get any worse? How would that work with somebody like that?
Well, you know, Parkinson's is like so many other conditions. It's not just Parkinson's. You know, it's not like, okay, every Parkinson patient has the same exact thing as every other. So you have to get that, you know, straight, that there's many causes. So it's a, you know, and I could go through it all or just talk quickly about what we do now. For example, you ask, can you be cured? Well, I've taken people like him and brought them back to normal. Okay. And then the question is, how long do they stay normal? That's another story, because most of these people are older, and so they have maybe a shorter lifespan than others, and so they may last for another year or two or three, and then instead of dying of Parkinson's, they may have a heart attack or a stroke or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but I have, like, for example, one of my kids comes in a wheelchair. He's 67 years old. He's had Parkinson's for 10 years. Comes in a wheelchair. He can't really get out of the wheelchair. I give him one shot of stem cells into his spine, into the cerebral spinal fluid, and within 4 weeks, he's up dancing and back to pretty much normal life. And so we're getting calls from all his friends and family going crazy about it, because here he was in a wheelchair when he came to me, now he's up walking around. So now, is that the typical case? Well, again, it depends. And so I would say, and most of these people, now just back up a second, most of these people have chronic yeast infections. They have chronic gut dysbiosis. They have chronic problems with a leaky blood-brain barrier. The leaky gut causes inflammation throughout their body. It causes activation of toll-like receptors. These things trigger inflammation in the brain if you have excess and neutrophils from the endotoxins that come into the body from the leaky gut. Those endotoxins are going to be activating the neutrophils. The neutrophils go into the brain, and that causes the release of what's called VEGF, and that causes the increased permeability of the brain barrier there and the striatum, and you get infiltration of inflammatory cells, etc., and iron deposits. And so with iron deposits there, you have free radicals, and so lipid peroxidation. All those things are part of this disease. So you have, you know, think about it, you have to get rid of the iron, you have to get rid of the infection, you have to seal up the leaky gut, you got to get rid of the bugs, get rid of the heavy metals, do all those things, you know, and then throw a bunch of stem cells. Then you have a pretty good chance of bringing him into long-term remission.
Interesting. Now, I know one of the things that my friend did, that when she had her baby, she saved the umbilical cord. And I know you were kind of talking about that earlier as one of a place to get stem cells. Is this something, what's the process if a mother is having a baby wants to do this? Because I know when I grew up, they just didn't have that. You know, it was 1978, something like that. So that just wasn't something that we thought about. But now it is. So how important is it to do that? And what do you need to do to ensure that you get to keep the umbilical cord?
Well, there's, I don't know how many there are, probably 20 different cord blood banks that you can take advantage of. You go to Google and put in cord blood banks, and you'll get a whole long list, and you can go through each one and see what they're charging, etc. I just looked at one this morning, $1,600 to take the umbilical cord blood from, or they have also, they'll take the cord, and so you can see the cord tissue or the blood itself, I think maybe $3,000, or maybe it was $26. Anyway, the point was that you could save both, and you put those into, they prepare it, save it in a freeze, minus, you know, 90 or liquid nitrogen. And so then, maybe 5 years from now, your baby winds up with some strange problem. You got something with leukemia. Well, if that's the case, then you've got their blood stem cells ready to go so that you can treat the child with chemo, et cetera, that kill all the cancer and replace their bone marrow with their own bone marrow, and you wind up with a perfect match because it's theirs, and you don't have to take any graft versus host drugs and all that. And so you really, so in that case, you really win, because otherwise the kids, you know, generally having to take anti-transplant drugs forever. So if you can afford it, I think it's a good idea. If you can't afford it, then you have to make do with what we got. So, but I would suggest if you can, it's a really good idea to have those. And time goes by, you know, 10 years ago, we had Humboldt and Corbett Banks, but they wouldn't even consider allowing you as a parent to take those stencils out and use them for anything else. But now I think the rules in these places are opening up, and they're making these stencils a bit more available for, say, like the mother, father, or grandfather has some problem. They could actually perhaps use those stencils in certain cases. Now, it happens to be that each blood bank is different. There's no general rule in the United States as far as what is allowed and what is not. So you have to kind of consider that when you talk to these different companies. If you want to be able to use them for yourself or others, you want to try to get that in writing before you start putting your money down and putting the stencils into that particular blood bank.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is probably the main cause that this has not been approved by the FDA? Do you think it's something that has to do with Big Pharma because they want to make money off the drugs that they're selling us, and this would be a way to bypass that?
There's no question about that.
Okay. Yeah, because I mean, I've noticed that seems to be a big problem where, you know, that they'll let big drugs go through that have major side effects, and yet the things that really don't have big side effects but have, you know, maximum return, they don't allow, and that bothers me because I think that's like playing God with people's lives over money.
Well, we have that here in California too, with the California, you know, what is it, the California Stem Cell Association, CIRM. They only do induced pluripotent stem cells. The first, from 2003 till, you know, here for 10 years, 2013, they were doing just embryonic stem cells. They finally figured out after almost $3 billion that they weren't any good, can you believe it? And during all that time, they didn't spend, I think, as far as I know, not one nickel on autologous, which are stem cells from the person. So about maybe 5 years, 6 years ago, I was at a meeting with the hotshots in CIRM, and I got up and said, wait a second, now, you guys are talking about you want more money and all this, but how many patients have you actually treated with stem cells in all these 10 years? And they had not treated one. And I said, well, you know, you've got $3 billion and haven't treated one. I didn't get any money, and I treated over 5,000.
Yeah.
And I haven't got any money to study anything. You have kept all the money for your rat research, and me, as a practitioner who's treating human beings, would like to have some money so I can really prove what I'm doing safe and effective, and I get no chance to get any money at all. And they just said, well, that's your problem, you know. And so we're still in that same situation, and now they're trying to get more money. I think they won here at the last ballot, so they're going to get more money apparently too. But again, we're not giving that money to the doctors that are real doctors. The other ones are the PhD phony doctors. PhD is for phony.
It is. It really is. I mean, this is something I was looking into myself because I have MS and it's getting kind of advanced. And I wanted to try to stop it if possible.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Number one, you got to take a look at your heavy metals. Mercury is a big problem. They do what's called a DMSA challenge test. Simple thing, costs like $80. Whoopie doo. Within 2 weeks, we know if you got mercury. Now, if you got a lot of mercury, you got to get rid of it. If you have to, just take more of the same molecule, DMSA, safe, simple, cheap. And you may have to take it for a month or two to get rid of that mercury. But mercury interferes with your immune system, your immune system's ability to fight off things like yeast. And so yeast is a major problem with people with MS. That was first reported in 1989. In a weird, strange journal called the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine by a guy by the name of Orrin Truss. And at that time, I said, boy, this guy is out to lunch. That's craziness. Yeast being positive, MS, that's nuts. And so I, you know, like every other rational doctor, said to myself, this guy's crazy. Well, then, one paper after another, and by 4 or 5 years after that, he had published a couple more papers. And I had a patient came in who didn't have MS but had all these problems. He went to, I think, 21 doctors and all the misery and all that. And I listened to her story. I said, you know, and after I heard all that, I've been reading about the yeast, I said, you know, you might actually have a yeast infection. So let me treat it. And so I went ahead and treated it. I swear to God, there she's been miserable. She's been incapacitated, not able to work for 3 years, seeing all these doctors. And in 10 days, she was back as a normal human being because I treated her for her yeast.
Wow.
Okay. And that made me a believer that yeast has a real problem here. It is a real problem for many people. And the doctors don't want to recognize it. They still don't want to recognize it. And I can go on and on and on about different cases. But I've had really good results treating for fungus, yeast candida, with people with MF. And then, you know, throw stem cells. Now, I've had good results without even. So you can have it. Because it's not that you have just MS is due to the mercury and due to yeast. It's probably due to other things, too. You know, back in, what was it, 1987, I think, in the journal Scientific American, they had a big spread about MS and measles. And they had this big thought that measles was maintained in the gut, and then it would jump into the LDL particles and be transported into the brain and into the myelin and would cause then the body to attack it. Now, speaking of the gut, there's a particular organism in most of these patients that's called bacteroides fragilis. And this is supposed to be a commensal, which means it's normal. You look at the results from the lab, and it's bacteroides fragilis, commensal. And that means, don't worry about it, there's nothing wrong. Well, you say, well, wait a second, I don't trust the lab about anything. So let me check. So you look it up, it's on the gut. You'll find that bacteroides fragilis has an outer cell wall that's a lipopolysaccharide, endotoxin-like material, that, you know, it's just a gram-negative bug that does it. But this one is specifically strange because it binds to alumina in your diet and makes toxic nanoparticles that go into your blood and go to the brain and can go right to the myelin. And you know, aluminum is the most powerful immune stimulant we have. And so by dumping aluminum particles into the spine, now your immune system are going to attack your spine like crazy. And if you look up Google and put in on Google MS and aluminum and spinal cord, you'll see that spinal cord are full of aluminum and MS patients. Also in ALS, they have a lot. So aluminum may very well be a major problem too. So there's a bunch of things that we could look at. But like I say, if you have a lot of bacteria, then let's get rid of it and start trying to clean up all these things. So basically, people ask me, what do I do? And what do I specialize in? Because I was trained as a biochemist, as a surgeon, as a microbiologist, orthopedic surgeon, internal medicine. I was trained in a lot of pathology. And so people say, what do I specialize in? I specialize in taking out the bad and putting in the good. And that's the simple way. Because that's easy, you know. Just identify everything wrong with you. Get rid of it as much as you can, and then put all the good things back in. Crush your fingers and do everything right. You know, like for neuropathy, you know, that's what you've got is a little bit of like a spinal cord neuropathy. You know what the best food for that is?
What?
Sardines.
Really?
You know, yeah, sardines. You know why? Because it's full of nucleic acids and purines. That's what the body uses for making nerves. You know, all the fat and all that, it's all perfectly made just for nerves. How many people talk about sardines for anything? You know?
Nobody.
So anyway, you can look it up. You go to Google and just look up sardines and neuropathy, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Wow.
You know, but if you don't think about it, you never know about it. Your doctor should. I don't have time to tell my patients everything. There's no way. You know, they come in, I'll spend 2 hours, and I still have got, 6 hours or more to talk, you know, and they can't remember it anyway. So you have to give everybody a little bit of information a little at a time.
Oh, that's interesting stuff. You know, we're about running out of time, though. I would love to be able to talk to you more about this because it is important to me. But I do have to, we will have to go to a quick commercial break. So tell me, how can people find you? How can people follow you? Do you have any books out that people would be interested in reading? Maybe getting a little bit more knowledge about what the stem cells and how that works.
Well, my website is strokedoctor.com. Stroke, just like it sounds, STROKE, doctor, DOCTOR. StrokeDoctor.com. My office is in San Clemente, 187 Avenida La Pata, 949-367-8870. I wrote the umbilical cord stem cell therapy book. If you want to go to Google and buy that, so like probably get it at ABE Books, ABEBOOKS.com. If you go to that website, put in my name or umbilical cord stem cell therapy. That there's a book there, long ago, 2006. But it's well written and kind of covers all of what we need to know in general about stem cells. Now, what are things that are great? Joint pain, knee joint problems, unbelievable. It's, you know, you talk about what are the best things to treat the stem cells, cerebral palsy and knee joints, because both of those you have at least, in cerebral palsy, it's about an 80% success rate, not a cure, but improvement in at least 80%. And then in knee joints, it's like 90-95%, the pain goes away within a few days in general. So, there's no reason to suffer, if you have a few bucks, because, instead of taking narcotics and killing yourself with narcotics and not feeling good, not being able to work, you take one shot of this stuff and you're up and going again. And, you're not like a new person, but I've had some that have done really well. I remember one, after 4 years, he was still out running on a bad knee that I had given one shot to. And so he was bragging about how well he was doing. So you do have, generally it's about a 2 year course of remission mm-hmm. from a bad knee. So, anyway, there's a lot more things to talk about, and I appreciate you letting me talk.
No problem. Thank you for coming on and sharing this information. I really hope it helps people out, and hopefully that they'll, look into some alternative things as opposed to just, getting out there, getting medication. Like you said, it could be something very simple that could be causing this problem as well. So, great information. I had a great time talking with you, and we'll definitely get you back on to talk about this more.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Okay, guys, we got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.